This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
You're listening to the Laugh Button Podcast on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Welcome to the Laugh Button Podcast. I am Matt Kleinschmidt, your host and Commander-in-Chief. Commander-in-Chief? No, I'm the editor-in-chief of the laughbutton.com. With me is Bram Teitelman from Metal Insider. How you doing, Bram?
I'm great. I'm not a commander-in-chief. I'm not that commanding.
Well, Bram. So, Bram, this week on the podcast, we have the one and only Seth Olenek. He is a comedy photographer. Chances are, if you've seen a photo of Marc Maron in the last 5 or 6 years...
I have.
It is a photo that Seth Olenek has taken. Seth put together a nice, really great book called Funny Business, and he basically gave me a copy of this book a couple months back, and this book is massive and huge, and it's got some great photos of literally everyone that runs the gamut from, you know, your John Hamms and your celebrities down to, like, actual stand-up comics and up-and-coming people too. And he also took a photo of pictures of a lot of comedians before they became famous too. So we sit down, we break it down, we break down his entire job and career as a comedy photographer. Yeah, I guess so. It's good to have you back, Bram.
I missed you.
I missed me too. Hey, does that work that way? I don't know if it works that way.
No, it doesn't. If you miss yourself, then you should probably check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Oh, Jesus Christ, man. Jeez.
What?
We're supposed to be young and hip for the millennials.
Don't push me because I'm close to the edge.
Jesus Christ. You went back even further.
I'm sorry. Today was a good day so far.
And this is why you need to follow Bram from Metal Insider on Twitter at Bramfetamine.
All the fresh lingo.
All the fresh lingo for the kids to get the dope.
It's crazy stupid.
So I'm glad you're back, Bram. Last week I was by myself, which sucks because you're sitting in a room talking and you're just like, I hope someone's listening to me.
Did you ever try to throw it over to someone? What do you think, me?
What do you think, me? Well, me? No, I'm not that talented. Yeah, I don't really have that ability in myself, so I don't really, I don't try to kick it to myself. But you're back. I'm glad you're back because it's been a while since I've seen you. I feel like it's been a while since I've seen you, yet I see you all the time because you sit like right next to me. So
right across from each other.
You're running all things metal. I'm running all things comedy.
It's a good thing we're both attractive gentlemen, or else we'd be sick of each other.
Are we? Mm. Are we really both attractive gentlemen?
We have a great podcast look.
We do. We have a face for podcast, a face for pod, as they say. So what's new with you, man? What you up to?
Running Metal Insider is a very exciting thing. Got to hang out with Mastodon, my boys in Mastodon.
Don.
If any of our listeners haven't seen the video for Show Yourself, first of all, Brian Persaud's in it.
He is in the video.
Second of all, it would be hysterical even if he wasn't in it. It's a really funny, good video, and you should see it and buy their new album, Emperor's Hand, in stores now.
Yeah. A plug for the Don. Never mind plugging the Don. Never have a problem with that, because the Mastodon actually has a great sense of humor. There's some really, really funny dudes. So.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw them on Kimmel the other day, but the drummer, Bron, was wearing a silk-screened Harambe shirt that said In Loving Memory.
In Loving Memory of the Harambe.
Yeah.
No, I did not see that, actually.
Well, there you have it.
So, Bram, tons of stuff is going on in the country.
Tons of stuff. Lots of new specials, lots of new pickups.
Buddy, this week alone, we're looking at 5 or 6 like big television events or TV streaming watching events that are happening this week. Basically, we have ourselves. Let's start it off. The week started off with Louis C.K. special premiering on Netflix, 2017.
That's like Sinatra dropping an album.
Sure. And what do you mean by that?
He is at the top of his game. Everyone knows who Louis C.K. is. He's You know, I'm not saying he's like Sinatra in terms of his voice, but everyone knows who he is, and he's the gold standard of comedy right now.
There you go. Okay, I'll buy that gold standard of comedy. Got it, Louis C.K. Yeah, his special dropped 2017. Netflix has been on a tear. I feel like broken record when we talk about this, because like every week it's like, yeah, another new baller comedian has new record special coming out. But like, you know, Amy Schumer into Dave Chappelle into Louis C.K. This week, also Brian Regan announced he was doing two specials for comedies for Netflix, which is crazy because Brian Regan's one of those guys where he doesn't have a TV show. He's never been really a TV kind of guy. He doesn't really do anything other than just tour and be stand-up comic. But the guy fucking sells out theaters and arenas all over the country, and he's constantly on the road because he is like, he's masterful at that. The most recent thing you might know Brian Regan from was he did a live stand-up show at Radio City Music Hall for Comedy Central about 2 years ago, and that was pretty awesome. But Brian Regan's one of those guys, super well respected. He's very clean, but like every comic loves him, so he's definitely a dude to kind of keep your eye out for. He has a special as well. Keep your eye out for. I say like people, like he's a new guy. Brian Regan's around 20 fucking years.
Up and coming.
Yeah, he's Regan. Up and coming. Brian Regan. Okay, so Louis put out a special which is receiving really great reviews. It's a very Louis special where he starts off talking about like ridiculous stuff and just kind of never lets up from that.
Abortion. He's just like, hey, abortion, guys.
Hey, let's talk about abortion. Like he goes into that, which is kind of funny because a lot of comedians have, I don't want to say they've gotten themselves into hot water, but there's a much smaller threshold for tolerance in 2017 than there might have been even 3 years ago for as far as what comics say, what comics do. And like even Chappelle, he taped this special, his two specials, one he did in October and one he did in 2015. And a lot of people had some problems with what he was even talking about in the 2015 special.
Sure, the whole transsexual thing.
Yeah, he made the transsexual jokes and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, and Amy Schumer caught some shit on her most recent special too, which is like, these people are masters at their stuff. Like, why are we even not giving them the slight benefit of the doubt?
I have a suggestion or a thought why. I mean, I think comedy's as big as it's ever been, and the barrier for entry is a lot lower. Like,
yeah.
I don't mean barrier for entry, but you have to commit to going to a taping or going to a special or buying an album. And now if you have a Netflix subscription, which many people do, mm-hmm. and an Amy Schumer or Dave Chappelle puts a special out, you're going to listen to it. And, yeah. You know, I think that it's a lot easier to find quality comedy from megastars now.
I think so, too. I also think, it's one of two things. One is the nature... whatever you want to call it, the PC culture, the whatever it is, the SJW culture of comedy. So comedians, I feel like they're criticized quicker, especially with the rise of social media. They're criticized quicker. It's almost like we used to listen to politicians and laugh at comedians, and now we're like almost laughing at politicians and listening to comedians. So I think there's that. I think that, you know, because of what they talk about, their social commentary, it's definitely viewed as a stricter thing. I also think that what you're talking about, the barrier to their entry, it kind of has something to do with it. Some comics might not necessarily be ready for a special, but they're maybe getting a special greenlit at like maybe year 7, 8. For comics that used to might get greenlit for a special at like maybe like 10 or 11, 12. So I do think with the influx of more outlets for people looking for this content, there's a million different places you can stream comedy content these days. There's a million different networks that are focusing on content, that there's a demand for more comics, and the pool of competent comics, I think, isn't necessarily growing because it takes 10 years, 15 years, 16 years. Like, your guys like Bill Burr, your guys like Joe Rogan, your guys like Louis C.K., those guys are like 17 plus, 18 plus years in the game. And one thing I don't think a lot of people remember is Amy Schumer she might be at 10 years in the game at this point. She definitely got a jump early in her career, and it's actually interesting to see her happen because, you know, she might be making mistakes an 8 or 9 year comic might make that like maybe a 20 year comic might not do the same thing. So I'm not saying she's not a master or good, but I am saying that Amy Schumer, for as big as she is, she definitely is quote unquote earlier in her comedy career than say a Joe Rogan or a Bill Burr or Louis C.K.
Sure. There's some, yeah, I mean, there's some people very late in their comedy career doing weird things.
Well, there's some
Bill Cosby, and
well, it sounds like he's been doing weird things for a while though. Yeah, I feel like every like month there's a new legal development on the Bill Cosby case too. So right now his case, they just released something this week about like there's something, some sort of deposition that basically he could potentially get 10 years for this stuff, which the argument is, well,
that's a death sentence.
It's a death sentence basically. basically is what they're saying. So I don't know, man. I don't know. So, okay. So Louis has a special out. And then Wednesday night, we're looking at the premieres of IFC's new show, Brockmire, starring Hank Azaria. We're also looking at the premiere of True TV's talk show, The Game Show, with Guy Branum. We actually did an interview with Guy. It's going to go live on the website. It might actually be live by the time you even read this too. But, and we also saw a talk show, The Game Show, taped down at South by Southwest. It's a brand new show. The whole idea behind it is he has guests on and they almost get ratings or they get scored based on their talk show conversation with Guy. If they take a sip of water, it's so many points. If they name drop someone, it's certain points. If they get a laugh, it's certain points. And then they tally it all up at the end and they give people like points. But Guy is involved with it. Laurie Kilmartin was involved with it. And as well as, I'm spacing on his name, but his scoring partner, who's like this guy, this encyclopedic knowledge of the show. And Wanda Sykes has come and executive produced the show too. So True TV should have it out there. I'm sorry, not Laurie Kilmartin, Karen Kilgareth. I was like, why did I say Laurie Kilmartin? As soon as I said it, I was like, I'm wrong on this. Yeah, so that premieres on True TV on Wednesday night. Thursday, you're looking at What's Your Fucking Deal from Jay Oakerson, the CISO dropping. Entire season is dropping at one for binge watching. So you basically get all eight episodes or 10 episodes you can get on that. One taping. And everyone is fucking in this. I mean, like, you're talking about Attell, Bobby Kelly, Gina Yashere, Dante Nero, Joe DeRosa, all of his friends. The goddamn Comedy Jam showed up. Also, Tony Clifton showed up on this whole thing this season, so it's kind of crazy. I actually went to a taping of this with Mark. It was actually, the taping we went to was election night, and it was interesting watching people who were clearly getting updates from their phones as far as what was going on, and it was a room in New York, so obviously it very, very much leaned liberally more towards Clinton, and just watching the face on people as the taping was happening, as the election results were rolling in, people were like, are you fucking kidding me?
Anyone walk out?
Nobody walked out, but it was one of those things, because of the time it was taped, it was clearly taped, obviously, to come out now. So, like, you couldn't talk about the election as it was happening and unfolding in real time. And the whole point of a crowd work show is that it happens in real time.
Sure.
So it was one of those things where it's like, none of the comics could talk about what was happening, but everyone kind of, like, was quietly acknowledging what the fuck was going on. So it was a very weird night for this taping that happened for some people. So I remember specifically after the taping running into Charlie from South by Southwest. Charlie, right. Who coordinates all the comedy programming for South by Southwest. And he was a Clinton supporter, from what I understand. And we were talking about
Bill it. Or Hillary.
This election was Hillary, but we were talking about him, and he was like, hey, what's going on? Like, because there's people that are like, wow, this is really happening, or like, she would lose a state that people thought she would win. And I saw in the Charlie we were talking about. And as I left, I remember specifically saying to Charlie, God help us, every one of us, as we were walking away. Because he was going into the lady TV as I was walking in. I just remember that specifically in my head. So like, I kind of always have a memory of where I was the day and night that Donald Trump got elected. And it's associated with What's Your Fucking Deal from Jay Oakerson, which is kind of funny to hear. So that's premiering this week. And then we got What's Your Fucking Deal. And then we, at the end of the week, it's being tapped off with Louis C.K. I'm sorry, Friday, Steve Burns' new special, Just Tell the... Tell the Damn Joke, that premieres on Showtime. And then Friday, we got Louis C.K. hosting SNL. So it's like a jam.
You mean Saturday?
I'm sorry, Saturday. We have Louis C.K. hosting SNL. So we have ourselves a jam-packed week of stand-up comedy and comedy this week. It's nuts, man. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I know you want to contribute to it, but there's nothing else to add.
It's like, no, really, I mean, okay. Basically, like, if you want to laugh, you have plenty of options.
Yeah, plenty going on. Also... Oh, and then Sunday, you got T.J. Miller's new show, The Gorberger Show, premiering as well, which is, I don't know how to describe The Gorberger Show. It's basically T.J. Miller voices like an alien who comes down and crashes like a Japanese talk show and basically takes it over.
It's really weird.
It's super weird. It's super awesome. It started off as a web series on Funny or Die for like two seasons, and it got greenlit. But I feel like this is T.J. Miller has said in an article, like, this is his Deadpool, where it was like his passion project. And like Ryan Reynolds, he was just trying for a very, very long time to get it greenlit. And on the air, and now it's on the air, and it's bonkers, man. But like, at the same time, like, big time comics have already appeared on the show. Bands like, I remember Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers was on the web series. It was just like so bonkers. So
it'll be interesting to see what it's like with probably a bigger budget and him being way more well known than
exactly,
he was.
Exactly. And the late night format is, they're doing some really interesting twists with late night. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff that happened in the late night. I mean, first of all, you have the Eric Andre Show, which is this crazy twist on how late night talk shows should work, which is bonkers. Then you have the T.J. Miller with Gorberger, but then there's a lot of other late night developments happening as well too. I mean, this week they talked about Stephen Colbert quote unquote remixing his
His reruns.
His reruns where he just kind of tapes a new fresh intro and then they go back, which is interesting.
And there's some new interviews actually that
And he's trying to capitalize basically on the fact that he's literally been number one in the late night ratings since basically since the top of the year, which is interesting because he was losing to Fallon.
The other guy's Fallon in the ratings. See what I did there?
I see what you did there. Hey, I don't know if I'm happy with what you did there.
I'm not.
Okay, cool. The other thing going on this week, that as far as late night, they greenlit a late night show for Eliza Schlesinger. Her podcast, Truth and Eliza, basically got greenlit for a couple episode run on, like, I think I want to say 6 or 7 episodes on Freeform, which is the formerly ABC Family channel. Anthony Adamaniuk, who is, for many people that are familiar with that followed him during the presidential election, he is the Trump version of the Trump versus Bernie. James Adomian used to do the Bernie Sanders, and they basically had this whole thing going on the entire election. They would tour on this. It was basically two improv guys doing like superb impressions of each one of these presidential candidates, and they basically toured on it. It was recorded as an album. Fusion picked it up and actually did a little bit of election coverage with those guys. But now they're doing a full blown late night show with him called The President Show.
It's great.
Yeah, Anthony's basically doing Donald Trump, who is, the whole premise is Donald Trump doesn't trust the mainstream media, so he's doing his own show out of the White House, of the White House Oval Office, which I think is kind of funny.
If it's better than That's My Bush, then...
You know what? I was thinking about that too. I was like, this is now the second time Comedy Central has greenlit a show about a president with That's My Bush. They didn't do anything for Obama.
Well, I could kind of see why.
You know what it is? I don't think it's a liberal versus conservative thing. I think it's more of a, Obama didn't really give you much to mock.
No, he wasn't funny.
He wasn't like a funny, goofy kind of personality.
You weren't like, what a farce of a human being.
Yeah, and I think that's why a lot of people were I remember a lot of when Trump was first elected versus Obama, there was a whole question of like, well, why wasn't Obama skewered as much as Trump was? And I think the reality is, I think Barack Obama didn't really have much of, he didn't have weird, I mean, he had quirks because every character has quirks that you can do impersonations of, but I don't think he had like huge, giant, caricature, boisterous, ridiculous things on about him that like a George W. Bush or Donald Trump would have. So I think that's why he wasn't like lambasted in that way as other people think, questioned basically. Who knows? The other thing, late night, the big one, Jordan Klepper. Did you hear about this?
I did not.
Jordan Klepper, the correspondent from The Daily Show.
Yep.
He was basically tapped to be the new 11:30 time slot, a.k.a. formerly The Colbert Report, formerly The Nightly Show.
Sure.
So they're looking at Jordan Klepper to kind of basically replace The Nightly Show. The Nightly Show, as we know, I think was a great show, and I think it was a very important show, and it was unfortunately canceled.
Never found its audience, apparently.
It really didn't. Never found its audience. I think it was... I don't know if the audience was a little bit trying to reach, it was trying to give a voice to marginalized voices, which I think was very important. It also was trying to reach a younger audience, if I'm not mistaken, with like, you know, the incorporation of younger writers onto the show. But I think at the end of the day, it just never really found its footing and its ratings weren't doing well. And they gave it about a year and it never did anything. And unfortunately, the Comedy Central went and canceled it. And they've since moved at midnight to the 11:30 slot. So it's not really named after the show anymore. And they're always looking for a replacement. This Jordan Klepper show is looking to be that replacement, which is kind of like, and Jordan kind of plays this buffoony kind of almost little fratty kind of character on The Daily Show, and I think it's going to be a play on that. I think they're looking for the closest thing that kind of mimics what Stephen Colbert's Colbert Report was, and who knows, maybe it'll do well. But Trevor Noah's actually done a nice uptick in the ratings. He's done a nice 180. His show, I feel like, is starting to really gel, and he's finding a voice, and I think right now they're going to launch and see if they can get a companion show back on the air, because that 11 o'clock slot for time for Comedy Central is a big slot, man.
Yeah.
11 o'clock and 11:30.
You need a spreadsheet to keep what's going on. Keep up with everyone.
I know.
There's so many late night shows, which so is a good thing. Shows.
It is. But it's also a format I think some guys are like just sticking to the original format, and some people are really fucking with, a la Gorberger, a la
Eric
Andre. I do think that there's some more room to fuck around with it than just like have a white dude in a tie deliver a monologue and some jokes. So that's interesting. But I think that's everything we got going on in the comedy space. I mean, in the late night space for the last week or so too.
That's enough.
Yeah, it really is enough. It really, really is enough. And one of the last things I want to touch upon before we get to our interview with Seth Olenek, I want to touch upon the fact that Bill Hicks is releasing a new album.
Really? Well, I haven't seen him do any press for it.
Well, Bill Hicks, he basically passed away, obviously. He passed away in 93, 94 of pancreatic cancer. And they're releasing his live at the Montreal Comedy Festival, a.k.a. Just for Laughs, they're releasing that set that was recorded there from JFL. So it's kind of like Bill Hicks being peak Bill Hicks. A lot of the material, from what I understand, became Revelations. The especially has, but they're releasing this too.
Who has more albums after they died? Mm-hmm. Tupac, Jimi Hendrix or Bill Hicks?
I think Hendrix has a lot. I mean, Bill Hicks, like, you're basically just Bill Hicks. A lot of it's just recycling off like a lot of his own recorded content. But I think Hendrix beats them all.
It's still great though. I mean, it's almost like a jazz album. It's almost like someone like Sonny Rollins coming out with an album or something like that. Like,
I mean,
it's basically a different riffs on the same themes, and you can hear some of his material probably come together and almost throughout the course of listening to the same joke over a couple different albums, hear it coming to its own.
Yeah, I think so too. One of the great things about, one of the reasons Jimi Hendrix has so many posthumous records is because that guy apparently literally recorded everything. He'd go to the studio after hours and sit in the studio, and they would just roll tape on like jam sessions you do for hours. So I think that's why there's a lot of those Jimi Hendrix releases out there. But who knows? Hicks was a fan of Hendrix, so maybe that's what he strived for. I don't know. With that being said, let's go toss this to our interview with Seth Olenek, photographer of the Comedy Stars. Seth actually sat down with me and we talked about everything that he's doing, from this book that he put out called Funny Business to his life as a comedy photographer and the ups and downs, and told some really great behind the scenes stories. So let's toss it to Seth Olenek. Hi, Seth. How are you?
I'm all right, Matt. How are you?
I'm great, dude. I'm great because I have you on here because, just so you guys know, Seth Olenek is a terrific photographer, and he photographs some of the most iconic comedy characters, I would say, in the comedy biz. Is that safe to say?
I like to say that.
Yeah, let's definitely say that, too. So that's what we're saying. So, Seth, you're awesome because basically you photographed, if you name the person, chances are you've shot them.
It's very likely. Yeah. At least a 75 to 90% chance.
There you go. So I wanted to have you on this podcast for a few reasons. One, you put out what might be one of the most awesome books. Like, this thing, first of all, it has some heft to it.
Yeah.
It's called Funny Business, and it's basically a coffee table book about, or just a collection of all your best photos with little stories behind each and every one of them. So
Each person wrote their own little caption to go with their photo, and every photo was specifically shot for the book.
I didn't know that. It was specifically for the book?
Yeah.
Oh, so it wasn't just like, you know, you're on assignment for something like, oh, that was cool.
I gave myself the assignment, and I followed through, and the boss was happy.
Boss being you, I'm assuming.
Boss being me.
Gotcha. I mean, like, everyone's in this book. I mean, you have David Cross, you have Jane Lynch, Bobby Lee, Reggie Watts, Aubrey Plaza, Human Giant, John Hamm. I mean, the list goes on and on.
The State.
Yeah. It's incredible.
Whitest kids you know.
So how long did it take you to put a book like this together?
So from concept to sending it off to the printer was almost 7 years.
Are you kidding me? Wow, that long.
Yeah.
That's
so
incredible.
The first shoot that I did was March 26, 2007. That was Todd Barry. And the last one that I did was July 20th.
Wow, you know
2013.
You know it down to the fucking date, dude.
It was my friend's birthday, and I used his son in the photo, and it was with Judah Friedlander. Oh, so if you see that photo, it's my friend's son, who was 10 weeks old at the time.
That's super cool, man. I mean, like, and it's not just like a guy sitting on a stoop in the photo. I mean, like, the cover art is David Cross in the shower.
Mm-hmm.
You have, like, like, I'll turn to a random page. It's like, okay, here's Chelsea Peretti in front of, like, a birthday cake.
Yeah. Smashed.
Yeah. Like a smash birthday cake. The candles are still burning. It's like, what the hell's going on? I mean, like, Tig Notaro, this is like pre-success boom Tig Notaro photos that we're looking at here too. So.
Yeah, a lot of these people. So, you know, the original concept of this was, hey, let me try and get some like bigger name people and also some up and comers and kind of mix them together in a book. I was going to shoot 20 to 30. That was my original pitch to the...
There's definitely more than that in this book.
Yeah, a few more. No, the original, like, seven people that I emailed, that was the pitch. Hey, I want to photograph you and 20 to 30 other people and then put a book out. You know, obviously it was very naive to think that that's how it worked. But yeah, each time I did a shoot, you know, the person would, you know, was gracious enough to, like, pass me on to one, two, three of their friends. There were a handful of people that actually helped me out to get a lot more than that. So Paul Scheer, Scott.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It's like you have all of Human Giant when they were still Human Giant.
Yeah.
So is Aziz and Paul.
Yeah.
And like they look so goddamn young in this photo.
Yeah.
Man.
And those guys. So yeah, Paul was the one that I originally reached out to, and he invited me to the set of Human Giant in January 2008, I believe it was. And yeah, got to shoot some stuff on set. That was partially on assignment as well. The photos ended up on CMJ magazine, like the cover and the inside story.
Yeah, that's crazy.
With the monkey from the Carpet Brothers sketch that they did. Yeah, and then through that, I decided, okay, when I'm going to shoot like groups, I'm also going to shoot each person individually.
Gotcha.
So again, Aziz, you know, when I shot him on his own, he had just moved to LA because he had gotten the role in Parks and Rec. So we're talking about like
on
cusp.
Yeah. A little bit right before Tom Haverford. And obviously, you know, Paul Scheer being a huge fan that he is of movies, it's no mistake that he used to work at a Blockbuster and talks about. So you got it back in like the teen days of Paul Scheer.
That was a great one. He got that t-shirt and I was like, hey, let's go to Blockbuster on Sunset and let's pour some beer on the ground.
Pour it out for the homies.
Make people think you're an actual employee.
Yeah. So these people, so the photos, I mean, I would say they're staged, but they're not like, oh, like, you know, look for best light, like portraits.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, there's Nick Offerman who's chewing on literally looks like just wood and he's got the beaver teeth. So like, do you come up with these concepts or do you talk with the comics about them or do you just talk about their personality?
It's a little bit of everything. You know, a lot of them I'm familiar with their work for years. And so obviously, you know, Nick is a big woodshop guy.
Yeah.
I knew that. My studio in Brooklyn at the time was upstairs from a woodshop. Mm-hmm. So I talked to the guy and I said, hey, you know, can I bring this guy down here and do this? And he was nice enough to let us do that. Nick was nice enough to put wood shavings onto his into his mustache. And it's a collaborative thing, too. I like to come to the table with an idea. And then if the person I'm photographing says, okay, well, you know, let's do that, but let's do it with like this twist or, you know, so it kind of ends up being a collaborative thing in the end. Sometimes it's straight up something that they have. Sometimes it's an idea that I've had in my mind, like Lance Krall, the photo of him is actually his daughter on a piece of bread and he's making a baby sandwich basically. Yeah. So he's about to smear some mayonnaise on her. There's like lettuce and all that. And that was kind of an idea that I came up with when I got to his house and kind of looked around. That's another thing that I like to do when I get to there. If I photograph the person at their home, which a lot of these people were photographed in their homes, I'll walk around for like 5-10 minutes, just kind of see, hey, you know, where can we do this? And yeah, so for him, you know, I ran out to Whole Foods, grabbed all the stuff I needed, and and we did that.
I mean, it's unbelievable how candid some of these photos are. I mean, like there's photos of like basically a naked Danny Putty in a sink. Mm-hmm. You have a naked Ed Helms.
Yeah.
I mean,
lots of naked guys.
Yeah, there is like the naked page.
No naked women.
There's Asif Manvi. There's naked Ed Helms. Like,
That's the Daily Show section.
Oh, okay. So. How do you have the conversation of like, hey, would you mind getting naked? Like, is that just an easy or is it their idea?
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, sometimes it's what the shot requires.
Okay.
And for like Asif, the idea was, hey, you're being birthed from this tree. So why would you be born with clothes on? So yeah, that made sense. Danny, why would you be taking a bath in a sink with your shirt on?
Yeah, I mean, if you put it that way, it makes a lot of sense. But
Bobby Lee, I'm trying to remember. I don't remember if it was my request or just him wanting to get totally naked.
For Bobby Lee, I feel like you don't need to ask. He shows up naked.
Yeah, yeah. Because nobody else was fully naked, by the way. It was just tops. Tops off, you know. I try to be respectful of my subjects. I try, you know. I don't want to come off as, you know, what a lot of people perceive as the photographer persona, trying to get people naked. I just try to get men to take their tops off.
No, I don't mean it. I didn't mean it that way. It's just like, it's just funny. Like, there happens to be a stretch of like, oh, everyone's going naked.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting in that way. But obviously, this isn't your first. You don't just wake up and be like, okay, I'm going to be a photographer and have an undertaking like this.
Right.
This is like 250 pages or so
mm-hmm.
of stand-up comics or comedians or funny people just in that. So your career obviously started long before this book. So how deep into photographing comedians and subjects and musicians too? I know you photograph musicians as well. How deep into it were you before you take on an undertaking like this?
So, I mean, I came to New York in 97, and within my first probably week here, I knew that I wanted to do photography, and you know, I was going to like punk rock shows, taking photos of the bands. You know, when I look back on the photos, they're not great, but the spirit's there.
Yeah, okay.
And really, you know, when you're doing that kind of photography, that's what's important. Some people may disagree, but kind of immersed myself in that world, started working for a record label, was photographing their bands. And then like in 2002, 2003, I started working for Hebe magazine.
Okay.
It's kind of like a Jewish version of Vice for those who don't know. And I was the photo editor. And anytime we had a comedian that needed to be photographed, I kind of took it upon myself to do it. I'd photographed Todd Barry that way, Eugene Merman, Dimitri Martin. So, you know, all these people, I kind of... You know, I guess that's kind of, you know, you could say what I cut my teeth on as far as the comedy world. And I wasn't going for like super funny photos or anything. And even now, like, I'm not always going for that. Sometimes the situation calls for it. Sometimes you just want a really nice portrait. But yeah, when I ended up leaving Hebe, I was like, all right, I'm going to embark on a long-term project. And that was, you know, what I was saying, the 20 to 30 photos, which turned into, I think, closer to like 240 or so, which I narrowed down to 200 for the book.
How do you choose who to cut?
Yeah, that was tough because there actually were some like big name people that I had to cut, partially because I needed everybody to write a caption for the book and some people didn't get back to me. You know, it wasn't always their fault. You know, I think some of the email addresses I had probably were old. So, you know, ultimately I had to leave them out. And some people, you know, kind of over the years, somebody will be like, oh, shoot me. And I wasn't the kind of person who's like, no. I think some of the people didn't really fit. And I liked to look at this book as like, you know, for me, the Ben Stiller Show back in, 92,
has it really been that long?
Yeah, it's been that long.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah,
25 years.
Oh, that's terrible.
But that was kind of like, I feel like that's where my comedy taste shifted. And then, you know, later The State, and even like, I'd say They're All Gonna Laugh at You, Adam Sandler's record.
I wore that record inside and out.
Yeah, that one, and also No Cure for Cancer, Dennis Leary. Of course,
yeah. I mean, so you and I are probably about the same age, so we probably had like a very, very similar upbringing. But I remember like, They're All Gonna Laugh at You. Me and my buddy Frank, we'd shoot basketball in his yard, his driveway, and we'd listen to that fucking record every day.
Yeah, it was
every
so good.
Day for a solid year, because that was the time when, and hey kiddies, here you go, you had to work a full week to earn enough money to buy a CD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 20 like, something dollars were, yeah, back so, then. I mean, well, in a big cardboard
They had the big cardboard pack, or like I think they were just kind of coming over to the regular jewel cases around that time. But you know, it cost you like 15-16 bucks some places. Well, that was if it was like the release week, they would charge you less, or it would cost you about 20 bucks. So like, you would have to work to buy a CD. So guess what, you're listening to that one fucking CD until you can buy the next CD.
Yep.
So like, albums like that just are kind of ingrained in your memory. And They're All Gonna Laugh at You was absolutely one of those records where I was like, Jesus Christ, like that really did shape a lot of my early comedy, as it sounds like it did yours as well.
Yeah, so that's great. Definitely.
And then No Cure for Cancer, same idea.
Like, I mean, No Cure for Cancer, I pretty much memorized. And I took drama classes in high school, and I had to do a monologue, and the monologue I chose was like one of the tracks from No Cure for Cancer. And I actually sat there and wrote it out, like listening to it, rewinding it, you know, writing it, and memorized that. But yeah, those things, all those things together kind of shaped me comedically. And so when I thought of like what this book would be, I always thought Ben Stiller Show, The State, and, you know, even like some of the SNL years,
yeah,
have that in the center and then just have like a bunch of lines coming off and how everything else is connected. Because if you think about it, almost all the people in my book are connected in one way or another, and it all goes back to one of those shows.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at just your index and The State, which I know you were very proud of those photos. We'll get into that story in a second, but mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, literally everyone who was in like Wet Hot American Summer is in here, like Chris, down to like Christopher Maloney, you know,
mm-hmm.
and what, and H. John Benjamin, and you got, who else, we got Carrie Kenny Silver, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah,
did not get Bradley.
No,
unfortunately.
But so let's go to The State, because I know, oh, I just happened to glance over the naked Bobby Lee photo.
this must be like, I don't know if it's painful or what for the people listening who are just have to rely on us to describe photos.
But here's what we're going to do. We're going to put these photos online. We're going to put a link to your website where people can kind of check this out, and we'll give like the visual elements that go along with it too. So
okay, let's, perfect.
So yeah, so we'll totally make this happen, Seth. Don't worry. Don't worry, Seth. Don't worry. We will showcase
it's
the
It's because
work.
I care about the listeners.
I know.
You know, it's not about me trying to sell more books.
Well, the easiest...
But you can buy a book.
Listen, everyone knows your. I feel like everyone who's looked at a Marc Maron press photo the last 7 years knows your work.
Yeah.
Because they're always using it. There's mm-hmm. there's the one with the black button-up cardigan,
mm-hmm.
where he's kind of looking very...
sideways glance.
Militant is yeah. kind of almost look, and there's the one of him sitting on the couch.
Yeah.
Like but his feet are on the red couch
mm-hmm.
and he's sitting on the back. So if you've read a story in a magazine or newspaper with about Marc Maron, which I'm sure you have in the last 10 years if you're mm-hmm. listening to this podcast, like that's your work. So
this is like early WTF Marc Maron
yeah,
too.
Just, 100%.
Just for the record.
100%. So you were like on the ground floor. I'm not taking that away from you. But like, does that like fuck with your mind every time you see your photo? Or are you like psyched because maybe I get some sort of money out of that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it varies. It
okay.
varies. For the most part, I love seeing my photos being used. You know, when my name is attached to it, that's even better.
Of course.
When people know that I shot it. I mean, you know, that's the whole idea. I don't want to take these photos and just, you know, hoard them.
Yeah.
And that was like the kind of painful, uneasy part of doing this book because... Yeah. You know, anybody that I shot in those first few years, it wasn't another like 4, 5, 6 years until people got to see those photos. So yeah. at one point I created a blog just to like be an outlet for outtakes from the shoots. Didn't show the photos that were going to be in the book so that when the book came out, everything was fresh.
Yeah.
So even if you saw a photo that I took of Marc Maron before the book came out, you didn't see the photo of Marc Maron that's in the book.
Yeah.
Which is him holding a sad fish.
Yeah. He's like in a kitchen with like an apron.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a fish restaurant in Queens, right around the corner from where he lived. And that's something, you know, he said, hey, you know, I really want to do a shot at this fishmonger place. And, you know, the guys will let me go behind the counter. So we knew that we were going to do something like that.
So this was like Marc Maron, New York City Marc Maron, pre-moving to LA
yeah.
Marc Maron. So, yeah. Yeah, I mean.
Or like in between. In between. Astoria, I mean, Marc Maron.
Everyone in this book, it seems like you took their photos as they were on the cusp or just about to kind of blow up.
Yeah. So I mean, like I said,
yeah.
you know, it was going to be bigger name people and yeah. up and comers, and if you pick up the book now and look through
like,
it, you'll
shit.
Be like, who's the up and comer? And
yeah.
it's like half the people were up and coming back then, and now they all have HBO shows. Or I mean, yeah, I got all the guys except for one of the guys from Silicon Valley.
Yeah,
got Pete Holmes. Like, I mean, all these people have like some of them have production deals.
Did like, now? Do you feel like that was just luck by being introduced, or were you curating like, oh, this guy's on to something?
A little bit of both, you know. Okay. some of the people said, hey, you need to photograph this guy.
Oh, okay.
Because you know he's gonna be big. I remember, I believe it was Paul Scheer that you know said, hey, you know, you should photograph this guy Jordan Peele. And
yeah.
I said okay, and emailed him, and I think he got back to me, and he either got back to me and then like the conversation just didn't continue, or I didn't hear back from him.
Uh-huh.
And I was working at the Apple store in New York. This guy was buying an Apple TV for me, and I rang him up and he gave me his credit card. And like I do every time, I checked the card or the name on the card to make sure it matched, and it was Jordan Peele.
Are you shitting me?
Yeah. So I said, hey, you know, I emailed you. He said, oh, yeah. So he said, all right, well, you know, next time you're in LA, let's do a shoot. And I'd really like to do it with my writing partner, Keegan Michael Key. I'm like, okay, sure. And we did that. And the shot that's in the book was they took a break from the writer's room while writing season one of Key and Peele.
That's incredible.
So again, this was like fast forward 6 months or so, these guys are household names.
Yeah.
And fast forward a few more years and they're like big movie stars. And
yeah. And I mean, Jordan Peele's, his movie is like literally what everyone's talking about
yeah.
right now. Get Out, which isn't a comedy, but.
No.
But
doesn't have to be.
No, it definitely doesn't have to be.
And and for the record, you know, not everybody in the book is a comedian. You know, I get a lot of people being
that's not
a comedian. That's not a comedian. Well, no, it's people that are involved in the comedy world. So like John Hamm, anybody that knew him years ago knew that he would go to shows at UCB, you know, when he was a struggling actor, and you know, he was always there, and he was always just a character within the scene.
Yeah.
Even though he's most, you know, known for Mad Men, I still think of him as like a comedic actor, and obviously since then he's done like 30 Rock and
yeah, I mean
Wet
absolutely.
Hot.
I mean, like, you know, Nick Offerman, who we just talked about, he's not a comedy guy. Like
right.
He's not a stand up or an improv guy. Well, his wife is, but he's in that world, that ecosystem. Yeah.
Well, he was a serious actor before Parks and Rec.
Yeah, why wouldn't he be? Got the rugged good look. So what? Okay, now let's go to stories about this. Like, you shot, what'd you say, it was 240?
Yeah, it was give or take.
Okay,
yeah.
There's got to be just like that one story from this book where you're just like, this fucking guy. Or like, this was the greatest day of my life. Like, I need to hear those types of stories.
Yeah.
I need you to basically spill the dirt on these
stories. Yeah, I don't have any dirt.
Okay.
At least none that I'm going to air.
Okay, fair enough.
No, there really wasn't any bad experiences like that. Mm-hmm. I would say, you know, the shoot that kind of, whenever people ask me like, tell me about a great shoot, the one that I, or a few that I think of would be John Hamm, actually, because okay. I arrived at his house, and before we did the shoot, he just wanted to sit down, and he had his coffee, I was just drinking some water, and we were talking, getting to know each other, and then we did the shoot, and then afterwards he was like, let me get you something. And, you know, I thought I misheard him. I was in another room, and he came back with an iPod Shuffle for me.
Like in the box, like
yeah,
here?
Yeah. Like? So it was a gift when you're on like Jimmy Kimmel.
He got a gift bag.
Yeah, so the Jimmy Kimmel logo is on
cool.
the shuffle.
Oh, that's cool.
So, you know, I mean, something like that.
He definitely didn't have to do that.
He didn't have to do that at all, you know, and just, you know, that's the kind of thing that makes you think like, all right, this is like a decent person.
Yeah.
And it makes it that much more of like a special experience. And like a couple years later, I needed to photograph someone for a book by Mike Sachs. Mm-hmm. And he was like, who do you think you can get? And gave him a list. And he was like, let's get John Hamm. I emailed him directly, and he was like, yeah. So
cool.
Again, you know, like a lot of the people throughout this process, you know, you say, oh, you've got like every single person mm-hmm. in here. The people that are not in there are the people that I had to go through like a publicist.
Yeah.
And anytime I had to go through a publicist, the answer ranging from probably 5 minutes after sending my email to, you know,
never
weeks or never yeah would always be no.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess it makes sense. Publicists are gatekeepers in a way, but I do feel like in the comedy community more than any other piece of entertainment, comedians are a little bit more accessible than the average band or the average movie star, the mm-hmm. average whatever. And I think it comes from a few things. I think it comes from, it's a small knit community, and no one understands your plight as a comic like another comic.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like there's a lot of these guys talking, and then there's a lot of if
people have good experiences, they're going to tell their friends.
Right.
So if you have friends who are like, if you have comedians that you're shooting, they're like, oh, I had an awesome time taking photos with this guy. All of a sudden, they want to recommend you to other people because they're like, oh, yeah, he'll do this or he'll do that too.
Yeah.
So I think one of the, and I get asked for like, hey, do you have any advice for me as someone in the business? Mm-hmm. It's like, just be fucking nice to people.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Be nice. Talk to them like they're a human.
Mm-hmm.
And you never know who you're going to work with. Even if there's some like colossal asshole at a place where you're just like, that guy's such a fucking asshole. At some point, you're going to work with that guy at somewhere. He's going to change two jobs and end up being a boss somewhere, or he's going to do this, that, or the other thing, and he's going to be a gatekeeper to something you need. So it's like, yeah. Just why be an asshole to people and burn bridges? So
you know, it was Bill Hader kind of had that same exact.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
So you're saying advice. I have the same philosophy as Bill Hader?
Yeah,
is what
you remind me a lot of Bill Hader, actually.
Oh, there you go.
Everything about you. no, but I mean, it's true. Yeah, people. I feel like a lot of times people will ask me advice because they want me, you know, tell them how to get in touch with these people,
yeah.
Or put them in touch with them. And like, I you know, nobody really did that for me in the beginning. So it's not that I don't want to help people like that, but really the only thing you need to know is the philosophy behind it.
Yeah.
Like you said, be nice to the people, respect their space and mm-hmm. time. And just back it up with something. You know, at a certain point, I had enough work under my belt that I actually used to walk around with an iPod Touch
mm-hmm.
with the photos
just
on
the
it. This is yeah
on,
pre
yeah.
Or before I got
yeah.
an iPhone, and actually Bobby Lee was somebody I was waiting for a friend at UCB in LA, and I was killing time at the magazine shop on the corner. And Bobby Lee was there, and I was like, holy shit, you know, this is like my opportunity. If I
yeah.
blow this now, it's not going to happen. So, you know, I went up to him, you know, hi, you know, sorry to bother you. I explained who I was, what, you know, what I was trying to do. And I showed him photos. And I think it was after like showing him two photos, he was like, yeah, here's my number. Here's my email. I'm going out of town tomorrow, but I'll be back on Friday and we can do the shoot on Saturday.
That's great.
And that was it. And so like, because I had the work to back it up,
yeah,
you know, I wasn't some like creep who's just trying to like get your information and you know, come over with a disposable camera and take your photo.
Now, I've been a fan of photography for a long time. I actually have like, you know, a SLR camera, and I shoot, and you probably hear like everyone has this. It's like, oh, I'm an Instagram photographer.
I have a phone.
I am the shit. So
I have a camera on my phone.
I have found that carrying that camera around,
mm-hmm.
just holding it in your hand, sometimes gets you places you don't need, you shouldn't necessarily
be.
Yeah. So, like, I'm sure that you've had opportunities where you're just like, all right, well, I'm here because of this opportunity that's presented itself.
Yeah.
And part of it's just acting like you belong there
mm-hmm.
sometimes, and other times it's just being like taking advantage of those opportunities. And I know a lot of people are like, they're skittish to ask, or they're skittish to
yeah.
do this or the other thing too. So it seems like a lot of the opportunities you've had has been like, hey, this is clearly an opportunity,
mm-hmm.
taking advantage of it, and then just like kind of seeing it through and not being
yeah.
a total dickhead about it.
So I mean, I'm not one of those photographers that walks around with my camera. Like, I have nothing against that, like
yeah.
you know, I mean, they're great. My camera is just way too heavy, and you know, I'm often, I mean, I have
yeah.
a day job, you know,
yeah.
so I'm doing other things. I can't just walk around with my camera. So, you know, when I do have my camera, it's because I have a purpose.
Yeah.
And like you said, you know, I mean, if you are confident enough, and you know, if somebody looks at you and thinks, oh, this person does belong
yeah, yeah.
here, then yeah, you'll have that access. And that's actually, you know, especially true when shooting bands.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, I can't tell you how many times I would go to a show with my camera, and you say, I'm here to
yeah.
photograph the band, and they're like, oh, what's your name? They check the list, and if you're like irate about, you know,
yeah.
your name not being on the list, but it's supposed to be there, maybe you'll be able to get in, you know, depending on who it is watching the door. Yeah, I've gotten into places that I definitely shouldn't have, you know, for God knows what reasons.
And you got the shot, right?
And yeah. But you know, I mean, all the
isn't you sneaking somebody out of
right. Yeah, the book stuff is 100%. You know, contacting the person ahead of time.
I should have prefaced this whole conversation with that. But yeah, so,
this is for the listeners.
For the listeners, if you're listening, this book is 100% on the up and up.
But yeah, shooting shows, you know, things like that. That's definitely. There's the advice that I can give.
There you go.
Have a purpose, have the confidence, and have the work to back it up.
There you go. All right. There's your three pillars of what's the hat trick. So now this book isn't the only representation of your entire work. You've shot stuff for networks too, like Comedy Central Records and Comedy Central DVDs and stuff like that too.
Yeah.
So, I know that I want to say White's the next comedy person was you too. So
that was me. Yeah, yeah. And what was it? Godfrey. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which album it was.
Black by Accident. Maybe?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. Doing the
him doing like a high kick into that one.
Yeah.
Like I've looked at your work. That's what I'm saying. Like is people that don't necessarily know you by name know you by the work because they've mm-hmm. seen your work around. So I mean, like, is there any you know, anything you've shot for Comedy Central or for one of these outlets where you're just like, man, I totally nailed that one, or is it?
I mean, I'm really proud of the Noah Gardenswartz album cover.
Blunt?
Blunt, yeah.
Okay, why's that?
Yeah.
Just because he's smoking a blunt out of an apple?
Yeah, the apple bong. That was something, you know, we knew that we wanted to do. I was able to find a classroom to do it in.
Oh, that's so cool. After hours, I'm assuming?
No, it was actually a studio in Queens that has different rooms that look like different things. So that was their classroom room.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, all the Comedy Central stuff was, like, really exciting because, again, that was a very collaborative thing that I got to do. It wasn't just me in a vacuum,
mm-hmm.
Like the book stuff. You know, this was coming together with the people at Comedy Central, you know, Darren and Jeremy, and you know, speaking with the artist and bouncing my ideas off of them. And the reward is kind of like, you know, this person that you didn't know before likes your ideas, and so, you know, you become part of that process and execute it. But yeah, we did some awesome albums with them and the DVD stuff. And years earlier, the Reno 911 season 6 DVD art, that was, and that was actually what led to the state, photo, the entire
Now the state photos are pretty incredible. And it was during a reunion show at Sketchfest, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, so what's
2009.
So the story behind this is?
So, let's see, December 2008, I did the Reno 911 shoot.
Okay.
And that was, so I had known Tom Lennon and Kerry Kenny before that, and they kind of pushed to you know, get me to be the photographer for that. They didn't push me. I didn't need to be pushed.
They
pushed Comedy Central.
So
I went out to LA for that, and they were like, "Hey, you know, we're actually going to be doing a state reunion next month in San Francisco." And it actually, I had a 2-week trip planned to LA to do shoots for the book. That kind of led up to when they were going to be in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'll fly up to San Francisco.
Yeah,
like,
that's a 45-minute flight?
Yeah,
that's nothing.
Yeah, it was easy. And so, you know, during that month in between, we bounced ideas off each other. We ended up having to go for something a little simpler. So, you know, it's a class portrait. And I got that, you know, the magnetic board that they always have for. Well, I was always thinking of like the soccer team.
Yeah.
You know,
I was just looking at my younger brother's little league team.
Yeah,
that little thing, and
oh yeah, with the little white letters.
The little white letters. Everyone's standing with like arms at their side, just kind of like straight up.
Yeah, because you have to squeeze together.
Yeah. You don't know how to pose. You're what? You're 10 years old. You have no idea how to pose.
Yeah.
Those photos.
Oh yeah, no. So and it was great. You know, and I had also, Showalter was somebody that I photographed back in the Hebe days also. So I knew him, and I knew a few of them already. And so it was a lot of fun. And, I got to sit in on the rehearsals of their show, shot that because I knew I wouldn't be able to shoot it while it was happening live.
Yeah, of course.
And yeah, and it was just an awesome experience. They were all really nice people. And I ended up, you know, subsequently doing individual shoots with all of them as well.
That's great.
And that's, yeah, so in the book, it's got the portrait of all of them. And then each page after that, alphabetically, I've got them in there. Yeah. And
very cool.
Great, great group.
Yeah. And I mean,
and funny.
I'm trying to think like some of the other things that you've shot in addition to, I mean, I could talk about this book, this entire podcast, but I definitely want to touch on the fact that like you've shot a tremendous amount of other work too. Like Mike Birbiglia's Sleepwalk With Me was something you shot. Was that the movie or the book?
No, it was the movie.
He did
poster.
Like three different versions of that show.
Yeah. 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 So. No, that was the movie poster. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it was a very last minute thing. And when I shot that, the premiere at BAM was like, I think it was less than a week later. Mm-hmm. And when I went to the premiere, they actually had the poster already. So that was pretty awesome to see, you know, your work that you just did, you know, 5 days prior. Already like in
yeah,
some
I mean,
physical
that's a,
form.
It's got to be a great feeling. Like, you know, as like I said, as someone that likes taking photographs, like I think it's super cool when someone shares my photograph. Like, oh, but like to see it as an actual representation of something that like in Birbiglia's terms, it like that is a huge representation of his life. Sleepwalk With Me really did kind of like take him from here to here because he turned that into a
just
book.
Just for the listeners, Matt's hand went from mid-belly to top of head. That's a
wrong, Seth. I went from top of head to mid-belly.
Oh, okay. Ooh.
He's in the downswing.
Now the shirt's coming off.
No. Yes. Thank you. Thank you for pointing out that sometimes people don't understand what I'm doing when I'm acting.
Here to hear.
When I'm doing act outs on a podcast. But yeah, but like Sleepwalk With Me was definitely that thing that like Birbiglia, he took it. He put it on Broadway. He turned it into a play. He turned it into, he recorded it for an album. He turned into a movie. You know, it was a book. I think I said book. Did I say book already? Anyway, but it's unbelievable. And so like that is definitely the turning point of Mike Birbiglia, and like you documented that part of his life. Like that's got to really, I don't know how to say it other than it's got to be a mind fuck where you're just like, wow, I'm forever linked to this project that Mike Birbiglia did.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool. I mean, I you know, if
you're
I
being
can
so
if
coy,
I can be part
Seth. You're being or, so coy.
No.
It's
no.
Awesome.
I mean, there's no doubt whatsoever that it's awesome to do that, but I just think it's fun to like, it's the working with these people, because I'm not a comedian, so you know,
neither
this
am
is
I, yeah,
so this is the way that I can work with these people. I can use my talent, or you know, maybe some people won't call it talent, but I call it talent.
You made a coffee table book that. Yeah. Just for the record, because, again, the visuals for audio, you made a coffee table book, and it's heavy enough that it could be used to commit murder.
Yeah.
So I think
it's 5 pounds and 11 inches by 13 inches.
So you
I don't
do,
know what that
and
is
you stuffed all your talent into that. So, yes. I'm sorry to mean to cut you off.
No, it's fine. But, yeah, I mean, just, you know, being able to say, hey, I worked with Mike Birbiglia, and, you know, I've shot him a few times, and... And each time when I see, you know, what we came up with, it's just fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm one of those people. I mean, the reason I wanted to do this book is I'm one of those guys who loves, you know, a souvenir or, like, you know, something like that. Like, you know, I like to have something physical in my hand, like a book. You know, a lot of the photographers that have influenced me over the years, you know, I go out and buy their books, you know, like Glenn E. Friedman's books, the Fuck You Heroes, Fuck You Too. Who else? Annie Leibovitz.
Yeah.
David LaChapelle. Like all those books. I just love holding a big coffee table book and just, you know, flipping through it. You know, I couldn't see this book having the same impact, smaller or even with like soft cover. It is literally the biggest book of its kind and literally has the most comedians ever put together in one collection.
I would believe that. I definitely would believe that. I mean, I don't know if it's true. I'm just going on your word here.
Yeah, it's true.
For those who can't see, Seth is giving me a very sly look. Like, yeah, that's true. Don't fact check that.
We're in a post-fact world.
Yes, this is very true.
I'm living in the pre-fact world.
This is very
true. Or the fact world.
Now, there's a shot on your website that I was looking at. It's basically of Donald Glover, like, as like the next comedy's new wave. Is this a Rolling Stone shot?
That was in Rolling Stone.
Because it looks like it's like that Rolling Stone layout. So, like, yeah. You shot for Rolling Stone?
No.
No?
No, 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 no.
Oh.
No, that was all part of just the shoot for my book.
Oh, really?
And then I had an agency.
Okay.
And my photos would live, you know, at the agency. And so Rolling Stone picked it up. You know, a lot of magazines over the years have run my things that way.
Weirdest place any of your photos have ended up?
Oh, man. Well, years ago, I shot when the Strokes played at the Apollo with David Cross and Guided by Voices.
Yeah.
I shot the Strokes playing live, and that photo ended up in a German newspaper, Süddeutsche Zeitung.
Okay.
I'm sure I just pronounced that wrong, but a very big newspaper. And that was, I think, the first thing outside of like a school paper or anything like that where I got to see my photo in print. So that was cool and weird.
Yeah, because it's German.
Yeah, that's anything German is cool and weird.
Well, did you try translating it? Like, maybe was it like...
No, a picture is worth 1,000 words.
No, but like...
But they're all English.
But like the...
I'm just kidding.
That's actually a really great slogan. I've never heard of that, so I will steal that. No, but like, I'm just wondering, like, you know, I don't know. Well, do you ever wonder what they were saying about, like, was it a review of the show or was it just like...
Yeah,
you know,
I think it was...
Who the fuck are these guys?
No, I think it was just talking about the show and probably, like, whitest group of... people at the Apollo assembled.
Parade,
you know,
of white folk was the Harlem at the
David
Apollo.
David Cross, Guided by Voices and the Strokes. It doesn't get whiter.
It really doesn't. it definitely really doesn't. So, like, I'm trying to think, like, I want to hear more stories. Is that like terrible to be just trying to pull all these stories out of you? Like,
yeah.
There's clearly a story behind every one of these. Like, and like, I kind of want to just flip and point to something and be like, what's the story behind this? What's the story behind this? Like, you shot Weird Al.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Weird Al is a childhood, like, hero of people. Like, is he cool? Is he a terrible human being? Like,
Weird
what's going
Al
on?
Weird Al is the coolest guy.
Really?
Ever. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he's cool.
That's good to hear.
He's so cool. I hope I'm not overstepping any boundaries by saying this, but he lives in Heavy D's house.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, oh, so he
I won't say where.
Well, I'm assuming Los Angeles.
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not.
You also act like someone can listen to this podcast and just walk over to Heavy D and Weird Al's house.
Maybe it's not even the United States.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, no, he was awesome, and he had a segue from, you know, when he
from
tours.
From the White Nerdy video.
Yeah, White Nerdy. So he let me ride his segue around his living room, which I had never ridden a segue before, and I've never ridden one since. So I can say that the only segue I've ever ridden was Weird Al's in his home.
That's great. You see me rolling my segue. Did that just roll over and over in your head as you were riding it?
A little bit. Bro, you know, I mean, he is, and I told him this, I said, you were the first artist, musician, whatever, whose like entire work I wanted to own. So, I mean, by the time I got into him, he only had, I think, 3 albums. But, you know, I for my birthday in whatever, 1985 or 86, I asked for all the old ones. So, yeah. What was it? Weird Al, the self-titled.
Well, there was,
in 3D.
Yeah, they're even worse. There's Bad and Evil.
Yeah, well, those are latter day. So,
oh,
so I think Dare to Be Stupid was the first one I owned. And then
yeah,
anything before that is what I asked for my birthday.
Gotcha.
So it was like, I think it was 2 other albums. Maybe,
I mean,
or
it's
3.
It's unbelievable, that guy's career, because you think about it, like, he's 40 years at this point? 40, 50,
yeah.
Maybe 50 years at this point.
No, no, no.
Well, I mean, no, he started like late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, 79, yeah. 80. So yeah, like 37.
30 years. He had his first number one record with his last record, which was the end of his contract, and he mm-hmm. doesn't think he's putting out albums anymore. Like,
yeah.
I can't think of a better way to go out that way. But yeah. also, he's outlasted almost everyone he's parodied.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something there to it. And I don't know, man. I just have a lot of like, Weird Al's one of those guys where like I didn't love for a while, but like the more I learned about him, I'm like, man, this guy just seems like I don't know, like it's just one of those things. So
yeah, he had a great Behind the Music.
It was one of the first ones too.
It was early on,
because he talks about like how Coolio didn't like the fact that he spoofed Gangster's yeah. Paradise and all that kind of stuff. Fucking weird.
Yeah, or the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yes, Yabadoo now.
But yeah, I mean,
yeah, we got way off topic.
No, not at all. No, actually, it's funny because again, you know, with this whole like Ben Stiller show being yeah. the starting point, you know, so in my mind, 1992 onward is what this book was supposed to represent, and more the kind of alternative world.
Yeah.
But you know, when doing it, and you know, Scott Aukerman was the one who originally put me in touch with Weird Al, and you know, Scott was one of the ones who helped me a lot with a lot of the people in here. I thought about it and I was like, you know what? Like, Weird Al is relevant to this book because he Absolutely. Has maintained his relevance over the years because Absolutely. He changes with the times. Like, Absolutely. You know, anything he does is current at the time because that's just the nature of what he does. So yeah, I saw this, you know, and you'll see, you know, anybody who picks up the book and buys it, you'll see that, you know, it's kind of a chronological thing at first, you know, the kind of early day guys.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Weird Al. Bobcat Goldthwait was another one. You know, I figured, yeah, you know, he was big in the 80s as an actor, but actually not a lot of people know that, you know, the 90s onward, you know, was directing, more directing. But
stuff, yeah.
But actually, like, the Jimmy Kimmel Show was, you know,
He directed Kimmel?
He directed Kimmel.
I did yeah. not know that.
So
That's
yeah,
crazy.
Ton of episodes of Kimmel. I hope I won't be fact checked on that, but I'm almost 100% positive.
I'm not fact checking you. And yeah. by the time someone listens to some fact checks, well, we'll both not be in this room.
Yeah,
so.
I think it was over 100 episodes, maybe
wow,
that's
incredible.
Directed.
I mean, I know he's directed a lot of stand up specials. Robert Kelly, whose podcast studio we're in right now, he's directed his most recent special, The Village Underground, right on the corner. So like,
yeah, he did. And Marc Maron.
He did, and I want to say he did someone even more recently than Bobby's too. So
okay,
he's I mean, it's funny. He's had this second life as a director behind the scenes, mm-hmm. kind of mover and shaker guy.
But
it's
speaking of shaking, Shakes the Clown.
Oh,
I think. That was his first directorial.
I think so. Yeah,
his debut, and I loved that movie at the time. Probably because like it's one of those things where it's like I shouldn't be watching this.
Yeah, of course.
But I am.
Well,
he's.
That's crazy. It's like those early days where it's like you're a teenager and like you're like I gotta go over to my friend's house and I gotta go to his bedroom and mm-hmm. I gotta put on headphones and I'm gonna listen to the new Andrew Dice Clay record. Because
yeah.
like, I've absolutely
oh, yeah.
done that and I'm sure you have too.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's just like I'm not gonna listen to this. I'm not listening to this at home, but I want to listen to this.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing about it was like my parents never gave me any inclination that they would be upset about that. Every once in a while, they get upset about like music I listening to having like just a curse in it. They're like, "What?" Well, not that they're against cursing, but they're like, "There's a time and place for that. Don't play that like you know in front of your you know a family full of people,
mm-hmm.
Or don't play the unedited version of a hip hop song that drops N bombs here and there
right.
because there's a party full of people. And remember that like you know you're a white dude saying things like that will get you in a lot of trouble." And I'm like,
yeah.
"But that's what they say in the song. It's like, come on, like we raised you better than that."
I think it was like the early to mid 90s when my family, we were all going on a family vacation,
yeah.
but my parents made sure to drop me or to stop by. Well, you know, in California, we had The Warehouse.
Okay.
That was the record store.
Yeah.
We stopped by there so I could pick up the new Two Live Crew album.
Oh, jeez.
that was banned in the USA. It wasn't As Nasty As They Want to Be. I already owned As Nasty
yeah.
As They Want to Be. So, you know, like my parents were cool like that, and I don't know how or why, but my brother owned Easy Does It, the first Easy
oh,
solo. So you know, and God, I mean, I had to have been under 10 years old at the time. So, you know, I've come up with that, but I don't know. I feel like strategically using bad language is a good thing.
Yeah.
I think using it for the sake of using it. This is not going to turn into a PSA right
now.
No.
I'm not going to isolate that last track and play that in 30 seconds with the more to know arrow shooting.
The more you know.
No, I mean, yeah, and I actually appreciate how my parents raised me and taught me about that kind of stuff. They never talked to me like I was a dumb kid, but they knew I was a dumb kid. I just might not have known I was a dumb kid. But they very much were like, this is how this works. This is how this is going on. This is why you need to do this, that, and the other thing happens. And like, I have friends who have parents that are like, oh my God, like, you know, my mom only let me listen to Christian rock or blah, blah, blah. So like, I grew up and listened to everything, like hip hop, alternative music. My mom and dad played Otis Redding, who's still one of my favorite singers today. And I can, for some reason, sing you the Johnny Mathis Christmas record front to back without missing a beat, even all of his inflection. So,
nice.
And I think the same thing kind of happens with comedy too, is like, I watched stuff that I probably shouldn't have watched at the time I was watching it. But at the same time, like, if I didn't get the joke, it's not a problem. Like, I don't feel like my parents ever really put those restrictions on me, because I think my parents were like, yeah, they just kind of taught me how this is how the world works. And if you say the N-word something, because even if you're rapping it from a Two Live Crew song, someone's going to hear it and be offended or think that you're an idiot. So, like, just be aware that that's a thing, and you either make the right choice or the wrong choice.
Right.
And I would often make the right choice, so it never really kind of became a thing. But, yeah.
Well, for me, like, you know, before the Dennis Leary and Adam Sandler and Ben Stiller stuff, like, I was I think there's a bird.
Yeah, it
in
sounds
the
like
studio.
A bird like just flew into the studio somewhere. You've heard
it's
that
on
too.
My shoulder.
Okay, I don't think our listeners heard it, but I definitely was like, "Where's a bird in here somewhere?"
Now I know how Marc Maron feels.
Yeah, exactly.
Whenever a dog is barking, or a bird is chirping.
Yeah, exactly.
I was listening to Andrew Dice Clay. Yeah. I was listening to Bill Cosby, which now the two of them make sense that they would have, at the same time. And I don't know why there's a Bill Cosby record in this place.
Well, this wall behind us is basically things that Bobby's fans sent him.
Okay.
So like there's...
So it's ironic?
Yeah, so there's like some nuts stuff. There's like Undercover Ninja Turtles. There's Bill Cosby albums. There's... We have a penis dildo gavel.
Oh, nice.
Type of thing going on here. There's a fleshlight somewhere. A bunch of Boston
there's
stuff.
There's a fleshlight everywhere.
Yeah, because he's from Boston. Shades Kelly, that's new. I didn't see that yet. Jason Chatfield, the animator, must have drawn that.
Nice.
Yeah, because Shades Kelly is a character. He used to call himself Shades Kelly when he was a lifeguard.
Okay.
And as a child, he had like one of those cassette boxes.
Yeah.
But he didn't fill it with cassettes. He filled it with sunglasses.
Nice.
And he wrote Shades across.
I had a cassette box.
So he had a
briefcase.
So as a counselor, he had his kids call him Shades.
That's funny.
That's where I think that comes from. But yeah.
He also has a captain's hat. Skipper.
Yeah, there's a Skipper cat here. I mean, obviously, the right over here is the Patrice O'Neill cap because he was really good friends with Patrice O'Neill. But
that's very nice.
So, speaking of which, actually, it's a weird segue, but sure, let's make it. There's some like you have a photograph of like a Harris Whittles in here, and Harris is no longer with us.
Right.
So like, is there anything? Are there any photos of people that you're just like, oh man, like I'm glad I got that photo because that person's no longer with us? Or is there someone who are like, man, I wish I could have shot that guy? Or
like, oh, I'm glad I shot this person because in another few months they'll be dead.
Yeah, I mean, is there anything? Are there anything like that? Because it's.
The last photo in the book is one that doesn't necessarily fit into like the mold of like what everything else is. Let's see.
I'm getting there.
It. It was
not Ken Ober.
Ken Ober, the host of Remote Control, which there you go again, actually, because that's where like Adam Sandler and Dennis Leary kind of came up, and Colin Quinn. So yeah, I photographed him, and I think like a year or two later, he passed away.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was glad that I got to meet him because, you know, remote control was like, for me, that was kind of the heyday of
MTV.
Like, hey, if you're going to do something that's not music videos, a show like Remote Control is what to do. Yeah. And for anybody that wasn't alive then or didn't see it, I think they have some on YouTube or something.
I'm sure you can find them online.
Look them up. Like that. Oh, it was so much fun.
And that's
show.
Where Colin Quinn cut his teeth too.
Yeah,
you know,
Colin so. Quinn, Kari Wurr.
Sandler? I want to
say Sandler. Yeah, he
show?
Was he was Stickpin. That was one of his characters.
Yeah, I want to say Sandler too. So,
but yeah, so and you know Harris. I mean, God, I'm not gonna go on and say like I knew him really well. I mean, yeah. I met him at his house when we did the shoot and. And we had some correspondence after the shoot as well. You know, I wish I could have gotten a copy of the book to him and heard, you know, what he thought. I know he said he loved the photo of him, and I think he even said his parents liked. I can't remember. Maybe that's just something I put in my head. Like, everybody's parents loved the photo I took of them. So, yeah,
you look
I mean,
so
that's...
handsome. That's what your mom says. You look so handsome.
That was one that I was happy I got. And yeah, I mean, there were definitely people I definitely, you know, wanted to get Greg Giraldo. Mm. He was one that I was going to, or that I was pursuing. And Mitch Hedberg,
yeah.
I mean, obviously. And the worst part of that is, I know, it just raised my voice.
Sorry, my levels roommate, are still fine.
My roommate and I, you know, we knew that Mitch, I think he was, it was either at Joe's Pub or somewhere like that in the city. We were like, oh, let's go. And we probably decided to just stay home and get stoned or something.
Yeah.
And we're like, we'll catch him the next time he's in town. A week later, he died. So we never got the chance to see him live.
Oh, that's
And, you know, maybe in a way that's good. I don't know how that show went. From what I hear, some of the shows were spotty. So at least, you know, yeah. In my mind, I get to like maintain that, like
the pristine vision,
the pristine vision. Yeah. Gotcha. So, but yeah, I would have loved to have photographed him or just met him, you know,
yeah.
Photographing, you know, for me, I don't go up to people on the street. I don't ask for, autographs, you know, unless it's like, you know, I'm going to like a book reading or signing, but I don't go up to people and ask for their autographs. I don't necessarily ask if I can take a selfie with them. For me, the equivalent is, can I do a photo shoot with you? And me being able to take the photo of them is the proof that I was there with them.
Yeah, I mean, you have that special ability because I kind of operate in the same way. In a way, I'm very much in the comedy industry, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. In a way, I'm not. And I'm a kind of a fanboy of some stuff, too. Like after this podcast, I'm going to ask you to take a picture with me. So just be prepared for that.
I'm ready.
But if you were a comedian, this is probably the only circumstance which I would ask for that. We've hung for an hour. We're doing this specifically for this promotional reason. We're doing this because or you're a friend and want to hang and it's a document that. But like if you're hanging out, you know, backstage somewhere and I'm there because I'm kind of working or supposed to be there, like I'm not going to come up and be like, hey, man, let's get a selfie and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with people that do that. But to me, I feel like I've benefited very well from being a friend and just chill first, and mm-hmm. it's kind of helped me open doors because, you know, comedians are skittish. Sometimes they're like very like, oh, who's this guy coming up with me? So like, I just kind of hang out and not be annoying. And I found that hanging out and not being annoying and just kind of like talking when spoken to and just kind of not trying to jam myself into a conversation. It's worked better for me than just being, hey man, take a selfie.
Another another important thing that I've learned over the years, just, you know, having known people, like this is like, just because I've taken a photo of them or done a shoot with them, like I don't go around saying they're my friend.
No,
you know,
not at all. Not
and,
at all.
And think like being realistic, you know, one story that always comes to mind. I mean, Annie Leibovitz, like, you know, for me, I mean, she's amazing. Like her Rolling Stone stuff. You know, if you think about like Whoopi Goldberg in a bathtub of milk, such a simple concept, but just so awesomely executed. But she went bankrupt.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the chatter is like, well, you know, when you're photographing people who are mega rich or whatever, like you have to remain grounded because you're just photographing them. You're not, you can't live vicariously through them. You're not rich. Some photographers are, but you know, most people aren't. So you have to remember that you have to.
If I recall, you did just mention you have a day job. So
I've maintained a day job for years. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm with Colossal Media. Mm-hmm. If anybody needs any hand painted walls, contact us.
Sorry to make you up.
No, it's
Annie Leibovitz and Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah, so you know, just kind of. Like you're an outsider looking into this world. Mm-hmm. You're not necessarily part of it. And you know, some people do integrate into the world, but I maintain a level of like humility, of like, you know, realism that, and some of them, you know, I can say are my friends, but I'm not going to go around saying like, everybody in the state is my friend.
No, and I didn't mean it that way. I mean,
I'm not. This isn't a reaction to anything you said. I just, you know, a lot of people out there, you know, will see like all these people I photograph, and they're like, oh man, you must be rich.
Yeah.
Like, well, no, but the people I photograph are.
Yeah.
And they're getting richer.
And they've given me an iPod shuffle.
Yeah, and look, you know, everything that I've done over the years has taken me to where I am. You know, the Comedy Central work came from, the album stuff came from the book being out. But you know, before that, just having worked with these comedians, and if they had a good time working with me, they'll recommend me for something. Yeah. And so it's just like kind of maintaining that professionalism. That's other advice I can say, just be professional. Don't overstep your bounds. Know your role, and just have a good time. Make sure the person you're working with is having a good time. Yeah. And that's across the board. It doesn't just have to be photography.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's great advice. It's great advice, and I kind of operate the same way. Just like, you know, act like you've been there. No need to go into a flashy room and take a photo of everything. Just kind of actually be there and chill, and good things will come from that too. I firmly believe that. I want to end this interview with two questions, two last questions. One, was the iPod shuffle the weirdest thing you've ever gotten from a celebrity?
I thought you were going to give me both questions.
No. Both at the same time if you want.
No. Okay. I'll answer that. The answer is no.
Okay.
I received a juicer.
okay.
From Rob Corddry.
Well, like, hey man, here's a juicer. Was he just trying to get rid of it?
I think it was that he was just trying to get rid of it, and I just happened to be there. I was like, okay, yeah, I've got Rob Corddry's juicer now, still in the box.
Okay.
I you know, I should have had him autograph it.
Something.
So stupid of me to not do.
Hey,
that.
Rob, can you sign this juicer? And. Best story, best photography story. I think we started touching on this earlier, and we came from the book. Like, all around, like, oh my god, that was the best experience front to back. Like, that, you know, are there any, or did we kind of touch upon them all? Was it Weird Al on the Segway? Weird Al on the Segway might be up there.
Those were up there. Yeah. I mean, I hate to be one of those people who's like, oh, they were all great, you know, because they weren't. They really weren't all great. All
right.
No, I mean, I'm gonna generalize right now that, you know, the best shoots I've had are the ones where it just clicks from the start, and that's when you can, like, you know, when you're thinking on the same wavelength as the person you're photographing, you can start to get really weird with stuff. and when you're all into those ideas, I mean, it's not that it's like weird or anything, but Todd Hollebeck from The State, the photo in the book is him holding a newspaper that's on fire. And you know, we were inside his apartment, and I was like, oh, let's light that newspaper on fire and have you hold it. And I mean, he had a fireplace behind him. But you know, I mean, how many people are going to be like, yeah, let's light an uncontrollable fire in my home? So, you know, stuff like that. Reggie Watts, you know, doing the, that idea came about before the shoot. It's him like opening up his stomach to reveal a computer chip inside, because I always thought of him as like half man, half machine.
Yeah, it's a good way to think of it.
Cyborg.
I mean,
so yeah, it's yeah. just kind of, I know, lame answer.
It's not a lame answer, but it's just like some of these photos are so great. Like you have guys that have been in, their faces are in mailboxes, and Dave Holmes is like unwrapped in a box.
Yeah, I mean, that was an awesome one, the Dave Holmes one. Yeah, it's like kind of Seven inspired. What's in the box? yeah, and Face Off.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, I mean, it's an incredible book, Seth. I really got to commend you and say like, awesome job on it. I mean, it's unbelievable. Your work kind of speaks for itself. So I think that as long as people know that they're looking at a Seth Olenek original photograph, I think you're good to go. So where can people pick up this book? Where should they go to your website? Should they go to Amazon? Or where
yeah,
they
no, go? Not on Amazon anymore. Okay. They take too much. It's not cool.
Bastards.
And they expect you to ship it really fast. And this book is, 5 pounds and 11 by 13. It's not the cheapest thing to send, but, on your computer, you can go to my website. So SethOlenek.com. Mm-hmm. And from there, you know, you can buy the book.
That's OLENICK.
OLENICK.
Yeah,
so. It'll be on your website.
Yeah,
too.
We'll put a link to it on there. But, you know, if you don't happen to be in front of the website, SethOlenek.com.
And if you are more the type of person who wants to purchase things from your phone, you can go to tinyurl.com/funnybizbook. Or funnybusiness.bigcartel.com.
Gotcha.
Those are the three different ways.
Very cool.
And I'll give you guys a coupon code to get some money off for your listeners.
Oh, cool. Yeah, we'll post that on the website as well too. So very, very, awesome. Very cool. Now, should people just look you up on social media as well to see if they
yeah,
can see
can
some
do
of
that.
These photos?
Yeah, Instagram. I'm at Smotown. That's S-M like Matt.
S Motown?
Yeah, it's basically, it's Motown with an S at the beginning. And on Twitter, just Seth Olenek. But I don't know, I'm not on Twitter or Facebook as much, but Instagram, you get to see photos of these comedians and just stupid shit that comes out of my head.
I don't know if I actually have I follow you on Instagram. Well, I'll have to do that.
Yeah, you can.
I know, because we've been friends with each other. Well, we've known each other for a while. Yeah. I wouldn't say we're friends, Seth.
You can call me an acquaintance.
Okay, yes. This guy I know named Seth Olenek. But you've also shot for the Laugh Button too. So
I have.
You shot our superhero fantasy draft at Comic-Con, which
that was awesome. Danny Tamborelli.
Danny Tamborelli for the win, but. Here's the unfortunate thing about it. And we reference this show a lot on this podcast. Mm-hmm. I've never released the audio of this podcast because we recorded it, but the guy running the board at the venue like ran it out so hot that like the audio is terrible.
Oh no.
So it was something we fully intended on releasing to the world.
Right.
But it sounds so bad. And like I feel bad. Like part of me is like, put it out there. Let people know that audio is terrible. But if you want to listen to it, whatever. The other part of me is like, no, we got to put out a superior product each and every time. So like I'm torn. But I feel like at this point, it's also been 6 months now since that time. But one of these days we'll do like a lost episode of like the superhero fantasy draft, because that was a blast.
Yeah. I mean, you're only as good as your last shitty podcast.
Yeah, I guess. You know what? That's my. Or maybe like I'll give it to an audio guy who knows audio. Maybe he can clean it up for me. I don't know. So.
That was a packed room.
Packed.
So, you know, I mean, it can also just be something that those people
shared. That's true, too. I mean, I videotaped it and I recorded the audio with the full intention of making video available by running the audio off of the board.
But there was no audio on the actual
video.
No.
It was just like I got screwed all around, man.
Yeah.
So,
we'll have to. Next year's.
Yeah. Next year, I'm having. Next year, I put a couple boom mics in there. I'm going to have like three people working it. So
it was a fun time.
It was. It was a very good time. So I want to say thank you publicly for doing that for us.
Yeah, of course.
You can go check out Seth's photos of that event, because you can't find it anywhere else on thelaughbutton.com. And you can also find out more about Seth and his book at SethOlenek.com. Seth, I would like to thank you for coming to the Laugh Button podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I love talking to people in the comedy community that aren't just specifically comedians about the art and craft of comedy. I think photography is very important.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of comedians are very visual. They have very like either they have a goofy look or a goofy whatever, or they make goofy faces. It's part of their act, and I think that photography is a perfect complement to what these guys do on stage, is just documenting this.
Nothing wrong with documenting a bunch of funny people.
Nope, not at all. So, thank you, Seth.
Thank you.
And that'll do it for our interview with Seth Olenek. Hopefully, we learned about all the photos. I actually got a handful of photos I'll put up on the website as far as the companion pieces. So, like, he talks a lot about some photos he took. Obviously, it helps if you actually have access to these photos, so I'm going to make sure a couple of those are up on the website.
Has he shot you yet?
He has not shot me. Mm. I am elusive when it comes to comedy photographers. I do not really try hard to get myself seen in comedy.
There's one picture of me doing comedy for the one time I did comedy.
I, you know what it is? Like, I prefer myself to be more of a behind the scenes guy. So, like, you know, if there's a photo of me with a comedian, or, and we talk about this obviously in the interview, but if there's a photo of me with a comedian, it probably wasn't taken by me or my idea. I'm just more of a behind-the-scenes dude. So, yeah, so that'll do it for the Laugh Button podcast this week. I want to thank Bram for coming back on the podcast.
No problem.
Visit thelaughbutton.com for all things we have going on. I would like to extend you to follow us on the socials. Anywhere you can type in at the Laugh Button on any of the socials. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. Definitely hit us up. You can email us at podcast@thelaughbutton.com. It'll be super awesome. Send me some notes. See what's going on. And, Bram, you can be found on?
You can find me at Bramfetamine on the Instagram, mm-hmm. Bramfilter on the Twitter, and MetalInsider.net, tips@MetalInsider.net if you have any tips or suggestions or comments about my driving.
Or Mastodon.
Or Mastodon.
So that'll do it for the Laugh Button podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Subscribe, tell your friends, and feedback, and make this thing bigger. Till then, see you later. Bye.